I guess I'll walk us in.
Yeah. Yeah, do it. Wait, no, let Dad do it.
All right.
Dad's a radio guy.
Yeah, Dad can do those.
Give us a nice cheesy.
Okay, you want a nice cheesy open?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody, and welcome. We're back with another GTAZZ. That's right. The Adventure Zone Zone. That's where the guys get together, have a little confab, answer your queries right here. The Adventure Zone Zone. Take it away, fellas.
I want to thank our father, who is cosplaying as every Simpsons character you've ever hated.
It's funny. Somebody asked us.
All together in one human.
Somebody asked us why Dad, both his character in Adventure Zone and Adventure Zone Nights, is kind of like sleazy. And it's like, oh, well, that's just our dad if you tell him
do a voice.
sleazy guy. Do a voice, Dad. Okay.
I could have done Casey Kasem.
You couldn't have, actually. Legally.
No. Have.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Adventure Zone Zone. It's been a minute since you've been here, huh? Like a year, maybe?
This show within a show.
A show within a show. This... what's the show on Twin Peaks called that everybody watches? The be less important.
Appointment to
Shit, that's gonna kill. I said that specifically to torment Justin for the next hour and 20 minutes or however long we go here on the Adventure Zone Zone.
Invitation to love.
Invitation to love. Oof. We're gonna answer a bunch of questions that people sent in and talk about making the show. And I think it's maybe a little weird timing considering there's not that much left in this campaign, and maybe it made more sense to do this once everything was completely over, because I imagine a lot of the questions I, as the DM, won't be able to answer because I still have a few tricks up my sleeve.
I tried to be very careful. I want to say, I tried to be very careful. It's so funny to me that, like, when we announced this, we were like, we won't be doing spoilers. The sheer number of people like, what's going to happen?
Who dies? Who's going to die? Tell me all of them. I want a list of all
the
deaths.
Safe to say that you had at least, 20 responses?
20, 22. No, it was probably in the range of about 4,000. no exaggeration. It took me about 3 hours to go through the question. A lot of duplicates. But we tried to go through the questions and ones that we could actually answer without ruining too much. I will say there's some stuff in here that's probably going to touch on what's happened up till this point. So if you want caught up to episode 59, this is just kind of a preemptive, like, we'll probably talk about stuff.
We'll definitely talk about
all
stuff.
59 episodes. So
yeah, I think we're going to need to, like, unpack a lot of stuff that actually happened in episode 59 to sort of set up the next episode of the podcast. So if you haven't listened to 59 yet, don't listen any further to this one until you go back and finish it seriously.
And why haven't you?
Yeah, it was a pretty good episode.
Yeah, it was.
Should we get going, or I forget the format of this. Like, who asked?
Well, this is different. I think last year we asked each other like questions that we had, and this year we kind of put it up to the audience. So how about this? Let's just all kind of take turns grabbing questions and asking each other. And I'll start off with this because this is a kind of a softball for Griffin. This is from Neil D. What's the production process like for an episode? How long does it take to put each one together?
So we record usually a couple days before the episode goes up, and we go for, what do you think? Like, I think most episodes are, like, on average, like, an hour 15 or something like that.
When we record. I should mention, just as a caveat, we haven't gone back and listened to the original The Adventure Zone.
Yes.
So in case we were doubling up on answers, tough shit.
Yeah, sorry.
I guess.
I cut a lot out when I edit, which I usually do the day or sometimes the night before because my life is in shambles, and I cut a lot of stuff out. Like, this is the most heavily edited thing I make. And so just, like, cutting down the recording to something that is listenable without, like, long, long pauses for rule checks and, like, decisions on what actions to take, I cut, like, maybe a fifth or to a quarter out of the whole recording, and that takes a really long time. And then I record the ad break, and then I levelate that, get that sounding good. I cut the intro together, which can take a long time if I have to pull. For episode 59, I had to pull a clip from episode 28, I think, and, like, fucking finding that needle in a haystack took me long time. It was the clip of Johan talking about being, like, sad about the idea of being erased. And so, like, that can take a while. And then music recording... it varies pretty wildly. I recorded the, I think the fastest I've ever done it was the Taz Knights bonus theme from this year, which I knocked out in, like, half hour, mostly using like pre-made loops in GarageBand. If I lean on those, it's a faster process. Other songs like the Chalice song took me fucking days to get that one going. Usually the music I have a bit longer lead up time, and then cutting all of that stuff together can also take a really long time, just like mixing all of the different tracks and sounds and shit together. Especially like episode 59 had, I want to say, like 15 different music cues in it, and it took me like half a day to make that. So like some episodes take me days and days and days.
It doesn't help that my brother Griffin refuses to break out of the 50 Shades of Grey style relationship he has with Audacity and will not free himself from its beautiful, well, here's what I say fuzzy about shackles.
Audacity sucks, but like I've gotten to a point now where I've gotten pretty good at like doing it fast. Like
let me open your eyes to the power of free.
I know. So the answer to that question is like it takes a long time. I work harder on this than like anything, and it's just because like, and I'm working harder and harder and harder. Like the past couple episodes, like I've doubled the amount of production time that went into it, and I'll probably keep doing that to the point where like the very last episode of this campaign will probably take me like I will need all 2 weeks to like get it going, because I want to stick the landing.
Let me add something to this too that I think will also answer a lot of other questions that we got in a kind of a roundabout way. Most of, if not all, I would say, of the editing that you do, Griffey, is to clean things up.
Yeah.
It's never, ever to change the story. That's one thing I a lot of people ask about, like, did we know Griffin was going to do this, or did we know? No, there really is none of that involved.
Yeah.
It's really making it up on the spot as we go along, not on Griffin's part, but on right. ours. And Griffin is anal about not letting us know what is coming. And so there's never any editing, I don't think, to like change a story element or take something out.
Yeah, like, yeah, I get what you're trying to say. There's no like me saying like, all right, Marl, do this. And then you do it and I erase my prompt or whatever.
No, we don't. Not, that doesn't happen.
That's one of one question of about 50. So we're averaging 7 minutes per question.
Doing all right. How about another?
Are
one?
You deleting these as we read them, Trev?
I'm marking them, so you'll see a bunch of dashes on each one we do.
Cool.
Okay.
Can I read this one from Tickle Pickle Disimon on Twitter? Who says, "How early in the campaign did you have the whole plot sorted out in your head properly? When did you start dropping hints?" The answer to that one's kind of tough to come by, but like I really did have most of the structure of the plot done by the end of Gerblins. Like I knew.
Let me ask you this. Let me turn it a little bit. At what point in there? Because we started Here There Be Gerblins started with like the pre-written like box, you know, the red box campaign.
Right.
What was the first kind of divergence from like the pre-written where you're like, so okay, right. this did it.
The Lost Mines of Phandelver, there, I followed. Here's how we followed it. You find the dead horses in the road. Yes. You go to the Gerblin Cave. Yes. You fight the bugbear. Yes. Although, like, I don't think the bugbear's name is Clark in the book, and I don't think you're supposed to, like, have tea with him and hang out. And, like, that's where things were like, oh, it's more fun if we do it this way. And then, like, you go to Phandalin, yes. And then, like, I think we jumped straight to Wave Echo Cave after that, and that is the end of that book, and we skipped the middle 90% of that book, where, like, you go and hang out with, like, an emerald dragonling, and, like, there's a big castle. Justin, actually, okay, this is fun. When I was in Huntington, when we were all in Huntington for the TV show shoot, Justin ran a game of D&D for the Smurls that I played along with, and you actually did some of the stuff in that book. Like, we went to that castle.
Yeah, it was fun. And you missed all the good stuff.
Well, yeah. There. But I mean, the thing is, like, I think by like episode 3, I realized I wanted to get off the book. And so we jumped ahead to the end of the book, essentially.
Now, this is my question, though, Griffin. And this is something I've always kind of been curious about. What was your like plan when you started? Did you plan to just hop from like pre-written campaign to pre-written campaign, or what was the?
I don't think I had a plan. I think because when we did the first episode, it was under the guise of you were on paternity leave, and so like this is a filler, and we didn't even know this was going to be a podcast. So when we started, my mind was in this mode of like, all right, well, let's just get an episode done so Juice can have a break. And I think that's been a detriment, I think, to the show, because it's tough, like, going back and listening to those that first arc, and like some of it I've had to kind of try to work into the bigger campaign, but like I really didn't have that bigger campaign until after that first arc was over, and I think that did us maybe a little bit of a disservice, because it did take me a while to start dropping hints, right? Like Crystal Kingdom is when I realized, like, I had the idea in mind for like what the structure of the arc was be. Crystal Kingdom was, I started to do some fucking work to drop hints. That's where you guys did like the whole like Cosmoscope and learning about the idea of like other planes and this other maybe evil plane that was coming, and like the Red Robe showing up and all that stuff started really hitting the pavement in Crystal Kingdom.
Well, now wait a minute though. I'm going to call you on that, because you know, going back and adapting Here There Be Gerblins for the graphic novel, I've noticed a lot of things that either you were brilliant in adapting or you were brilliant in just like there's a Red Robe,
yes, in,
you know, and you and us, and so, you know, but there are elements that I pick up all the time. I will leave notes for Callista, our editor, in the side that says, I swear to God, this was in the episode.
Yeah.
Was that more you just going back and retconning, or was it?
No, that's one very specific example of like me dropping. I guess that was technically the first hint, although like that was like the first Red Robe we see, right? And the Red Robes are sort of integral to the secret plot that you all learned about in the last couple episodes. So yeah, I guess that was sort of the first hint. But really, like, the last thing I wanted was for like all of this stuff when it was revealed for it to have no hints leading up to it whatsoever. Like no, like, oh, I fucking hate it in like video games, like JRPGs, where like you're playing it and then like the final like thing happens and it's some big bad that you like, it has never been referenced before. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I'm the big evil, force of evil that you didn't know about until just this moment, and I'm the one you have to kill in order to win. I didn't want that to happen. Like, I wanted there to be some lead up. So there's stuff like the patches you first got during Crystal Kingdom as a Candle Knight's present. That was a hint. I tried to, Crystal Kingdom was like every episode I was trying to drop stuff on y'all that would set this up.
So this next question is, I guess, ties into this because it's for Dad, but I think it's also from Griffin. And I think it's a good example of what Griffin's talking about as far as, like, the stuff from the first arc. And Ian asks, if Merle came from another set of planes, how could he have been related to Gundred Rockseeker? His blood opens the doors?
I got an answer for that, but it's not. But that's my answer for that sucks, and you'll learn about it in the next couple episodes, but it sucks. But that's the kind of shit I'm talking about. Yes, I've set up this thing where like you guys are from another reality, right? You're from another dimension or whatever. How can you have a cousins in this world? And it's like, well, yep.
That doesn't bother the DC multiverse. You got Supermans from Earth 1, 2, and 3 all living on Earth Prime, and they're still related to other people. I don't know if that's what.
No, I mean, it's they got me there. That's a good loophole. Here's the thing. If you go back and you look for loopholes, and this is not a judgment, like, yep, you got me. Fair play. Because that one I realized like at like fucking 1 a.m. one night. I woke up with a start like, ah, shit. He can't have relatives here. There's going to be stuff like that. And that's what I'm talking about. That first arc, I just didn't have it yet. I didn't know. At that point, I didn't really know that they were from this other reality. And so, like, I would just say some shit. And I'm sure there's a lot of stuff like that. And I regret that. It's a bummer. But what can you do? Nobody's perfect.
All right, let me ask one. Can I ask one?
Yes,
yeah.
I got one that I think all four of us can answer, and it's from Frilly
Finally,
Ice Cream.
I get to talk and not just eat chili.
Frilly
Ice Cream.
You
eating chili again? Because you were eating chili during the last recording.
Damn.
I'm on slow carb, baby. I only eat chili.
That's a good life. That's good work if you can get it.
How did the popularity of the podcast affect your outlook on the story and characters? When did you become invested yourselves?
I'm curious to hear your boys' answers to this.
That's a really good question.
I'll tell you when I became invested was after. Okay, so I made taco, and there was not a lot of elements to taco that I had figured out early.
Well, because you and Dad took the pre-gen character sheets that came with the starter kit and kind of put names on them, and there's your guys.
And some have argued that I decided to name him Taco in the exact moment that I opened my mouth and said Taco.
Yeah.
You didn't?
Some have argued that.
I would argue that.
Historians have theorized.
And there was a period where I just made him dumb. Does everybody remember the period where I made him like wicked stupid?
Yeah, he was just a trash bag there for a bit.
And I did that because I didn't think he was funny enough. So I thought it would be funny to make him dumb. And it wasn't until I tried to do that that I started bumping up against like, oh, wait a minute. Like, that's not right. Like, that's not who this character is, and that's not who the person is. And so that made me feel ownership. The weird thing about the show getting bigger is that in a way, I feel like less ownership now. And in a good way, I think, in a healthy way. But like, I see all these different permutations of Taco, and he's like still a character I made up, and that's cool. But I also think it's cool that other people have their own spin on Taco and their own sort of take on him. And I think that's really neat. And I want to encourage that. It used to irritate me. I think from a consumer perspective, when I would see creators do that, like, I don't know, the decision is yours. It's up to you. But
yeah,
like, as a creator now, I find that really interesting. Like, I find it really cool to let that space exist.
I struggled with that for a bit because it felt, to be like non-committal about canonical, look and design and aesthetic and all that, like, felt fan servicey in a way, in a way that I think I kind of struggled with for just a little bit. But I kind of realized, like, I don't think it's us dodging some sort of essential question about what these characters look like. I think it is us actually, like, taking advantage of what is a pretty singular benefit to this being an audio medium. An audio only medium. If this was any other kind of medium, like, we couldn't do that. And I think it's important to me that this show has like good representation, because that's important to me, and I know it's important to our listenership. And I feel like, and I try to do that with the characters that the NPCs that y'all come across, but like, I feel like this is a really cool way of doing that, just saying like, whatever interpretation you have, like, go for it. And because this medium doesn't have like these canonical visual takes, then just let it ride, and nothing's wrong. Everything is permitted.
Yeah, I hope this doesn't sound like a dodge, because it's absolutely true. I don't picture anything when I picture Magnus. Mm-mm. Like, I just don't think that way. Like, so, like, I see a lot of...
think about it. You're seeing it from... when I envision scenes that are happening, I'm seeing them from my perspective.
Yeah.
Like, I'm seeing them from... I don't see Taco doing stuff. I'm envisioning myself looking at the stuff that is happening around.
Yeah. It's like mist. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see my PC. And so, like, when I see, like, fan art and I see people's drawings, I'm like, yeah, that could be Magnus. Like, yeah. In a universe, that's Magnus. Like, yep. Mm-hmm. And so, like,
and I think we,
it's just never for me, like, this is my, and so it's more like for me, one of the weirdest things, as far as the popularity and like investment in the characters goes, one of the weirdest moments I ever had was, I used to look through the Reddit. I don't anymore, not because I begrudge anybody posting on Reddit, but it started to bleed into like decisions I made, and I wanted to remove myself from that. But like, after an episode went up, I saw somebody post the comment, "That's not what Magnus would do," about something I did as Magnus. Yeah. And I was like, wait, what? What do you mean that's not what Magnus... I am Magnus. What Magnus does is what Magnus would do. And it was like, I could not pretzel my brain around it. And it was like, okay, to this person, this is what Magnus does. And anything that... But the thing is like, people don't work that way, like in real life. They're like, it's not like this person is good and so they never mess up, they never do anything bad. Like, this is not. And so, like, when I first started making Magnus, it was pretty one note heroic meathead who rushes into things. Well, and, like, somebody talked about, like, the rogue, like, that's very un-Magnus like that he would train in rogue. And it's like, yeah, but, like, after a while, he of just, like, rushing into things and almost dying, like, yeah, there's a certain amount of learning that comes from that. So characters grow and change.
I think, generally speaking, like, the investment that you all sort of had, and this is just my perspective as the DM, but I also think when the listeners became more invested in your characters, and this is definitely something that we need to take to heart whenever we do whatever the next thing is for the Adventure Zone, that investment came when you all expanded, when the definition of your characters expanded beyond your Dungeons and Dragons character class. Because when we started, you were a wizard and you were a fighter and you were a cleric and that was pretty much it. But like, I feel like your characters really took flight and the show frankly like got pretty good when you were the disgraced former TV chef and the carpenter, the carpenter whose town and home was destroyed and the deadbeat dad who is a kind of a hippie cleric with shaken faith. Like, that stuff that goes beyond you just playing your roles is when shit got really, really good. So no matter what we play next, if we play like some, you know, fucking space game, like, I don't want you guys to just be like, well, I made an alien and I made a pilot and I made a gunfighter. Like,
I will say, Griffin, not to judge someone else's game, but if there's an RPG game where there's a class that's just alien, it's not, I don't know about that game.
Yeah, it sounds like that.
Yeah,
I will tell you a crystallizing moment for me, and it's not the joke you think I was going to make. I think by the time we got to this moment, we knew something special was going on. And with my hand to God, I think Abraca fuck you,
yeah,
was a turning point, because that was one of the hardest I've ever laughed at anything we've done.
Yeah.
And it was that I know that sounds strange, but to me, that was kind of a distillation about what was so special about what we were doing. That to me, that was a big turning point.
Yeah, I saved the show. Here's another question. saved it from mediocrity. We would still be soldiering on mediocrity, sure, if not for me. Here's a question to me.
Do you want me to ask it?
Yes. Why don't you ask me that, and then I'll ask one of you guys.
Which one is it?
To you.
This is from Taco's boyfriend, Goldcliff Trust, who says to Justin, "How much satisfaction do you get from blindsiding Griffin with new spells?"
None.
Next question.
No, I mean, the very short answer is I want to do... Taco's life is dope and he does dope shit. That's fact. And there are a lot of spells. Every time I do a spell like that, it is a balance for me of like doing some hard ass stuff that is cool, but also like I don't want to mess up the thing, and as much as Griffin says you can't mess it up, you definitely can.
No, you can super it fuck it up. Defo, defo, yes.
But he always tells us that, like, he'll figure it out. But, like, I don't want to break his thing. So, like, that's always the balance for me. It is in no way about blindsiding Griffin with spells. If anything, it is a professional and familial curiosity as to how he will... course correct,
yeah,
to what I am doing in any given situation, but it is never with the intent of take this Griffin, because like we could do that, like, yeah,
first episode on the moon base, it's like, okay, I attack the director, okay, that's it, thanks for listening, everybody, bye.
Let's spin that into, there was a lot of people wanted to know, Griffin,
yeah,
if there were moments that were kind of fucked up of your planning based, sure, on stuff that we did.
This ranges, the answer to this is, oh yeah. Here's the thing, and I could spend a really long time talking about this, but like the biggest thing I struggle with doing, being a DM and also being the DM of an actual play podcast, and those are two different jobs with two different sort of demands. And I think every GM has to make up this decision in their mind is how much control over the whole narrative, the macro narrative, do you give the players and how much do you keep for yourself? And I talked about in the last, the Adventure Zone about like how I try to give the micro like story over to you guys and like do whatever you want while still trying to keep my hand firmly on the wheel of the bigger picture. And so, like, that gets me in trouble. Sometimes there are episodes, like, I think all the Lunar Interludes have been an example of this, where just, like, I kind of need to take the wheel pretty much entirely because fucking episodes, this last Lunar Interlude, 58 and 59, I had a million threads that I had to pull together. And so that meant, like, I was talking a lot of the time. I saw some people say, like, well, geez, Griffin, just give the other boys a script if you're going to do that. Which I don't appreciate necessarily because y'all still, I feel like I still give you an, like, the opportunity to do your own stuff. Not only that, like, when you guys had this conversation about Magnus, you shouldn't get back in your body. I was like, fuck. That wasn't, like, I kind of thought you would. And then all of a sudden that next episode was completely different from what I thought it was going to be. So, like, I don't think you're necessarily completely on rails, but
Griffin has never forbade us from doing anything.
No. Nope. So
if anything, honestly, one of the things is like, it's a D&D is a very collaborative game in my experience. And like, if your DM, and not to judge anybody's play style, but if you feel like, the host of One Shot, RPG commented on like that, I apparently said in an episode, like, this is important to me. So Griffin like went along with it.
Yeah.
And like, that's how the game should work. So like, there's stuff that we've wanted to do and Griffin says like, yep, but also simultaneously, like, we see like our DM is crafting a storyline.
Yeah.
So why would we fuck with that just to fuck with it?
Well, that's
it. Here, let me give you an example of like this in action, right? Then the beginning of, I guess it would have been towards the end of 58, beginning of 59, Dad and I were in a scenario where,
yeah,
Travis had some idea.
That made magnify all of it, like multiply the complexity of all this by a billion, thanks to the fact that like I made it so that one of the characters knew kind of what was up and the other two didn't. And I kind of like expected all of you to go along with it and you did not.
Yeah, well, we said to Griffin, and I don't know, this probably wasn't in the episode, but at one point we had to say to Griffin, like, listen, we know we are headed towards something happening in the moon base, but like we're not there. Like as
and
characters,
we were not down with crossing going against the Bureau of Balance.
We didn't have the motivation yet.
Right.
And we could feel the narrative wanting to go there, but like we as arbiters of our characters, like in order to be true to them, could not role play that.
Yeah.
Because it was like we just weren't there. Like, we didn't have it.
Which let me, like, when I envisioned that sequence, I just thought, like, oh, well, if they're down, like, it's going to be this cool sneaking mission. And that's not really how it approached. Also, like, you told me that, and I kind of tried to give you a little bit more justification with you hearing that voice telling you to trust Barry, which I don't know if I should say who that was, but I'm pretty sure everybody gets it. And giving you that stuff with Angus, who kind of like backed you up. Like, I was like, okay, well, I need to course correct and do a little bit more stuff. And also, you didn't take the scene the same way I thought you did. You fucking walked straight into it. And you're like, yo, director, what's up? Part of me like thought you might just be like, if you had been like, hey, director, somebody's trying to cross you, we're not down with it, I would have had to figure out something on the spot, and I would have freaked the fuck out, but I would have had to figure it out.
Well, we wouldn't have turned on... This is the problem, is we couldn't... And where we were sort of had our hands tied is we also didn't want to leave... We couldn't have left Magnus hanging.
Sure,
right.
The problem is we didn't have time for literally an entire episode of talking about it between the three of us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. To try to figure out what was going on. And also, it didn't matter because we didn't have all the
clues.
The parts.
Yeah.
Right, but at the time... And each arc really and truly is a whodunit for us. It may not be a murder, but there's always a mystery,
yeah,
right,
that we're trying to figure out as we go through it. I'll tell you, this kind of ties in with one of the things, and nobody asked this question, but one of the toughest things for me, and yet one of my favorite things about this story, these stories, are those jury will kindly disregard the witness's testimony kind of things, where not only... There are moments where our characters are not supposed to know what the other characters
yeah.
know, But then we, as the player, are not supposed to know.
Yeah.
But listen, that's a level of complexity that I think makes it special because it does make it harder. And it forces us to be better actors.
I've been listening to a lot, and I talk about this a lot on Twitter, and I may have talked about it in the last The Adventure Zone, but I listen a lot to a podcast called Friends of the Table that Waypoint's Austin Walker runs their game, and they work in dramatic irony in a way that is just delectable. And so, there's definitely been a lot more of that in the last few episodes of just, like, Clint knows shit that Merle can't, and trying to play around that, as so often happens in Friends of the Table, like, is really, really good shit. Well, I want to get back to one last thing about this subject, because I mentioned this spectrum, and there's been talk about, like, you guys fucking up my plans or whatever, and I think the reason you're thinking like that is because we've been doing this way, and I think it's the way that's worked for us, in which, like, I am mostly guiding where the narrative goes, and you all are reacting to it. But there is another way of doing it, in which I say, you guys are at a bar, and these people are in the bar, what do you do? Episode one, that's it. And then you set fire to the bar. It's like, okay, well, I know what episode two is going to be, and I'm reacting to the things that you do. And I feel like that isn't the best way. That's just not the right way for us to do it, right? Because I don't know, I, the DM, I, the person running the game, I don't know how to make a good story out of that. Because it's going to be a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and it's going to be like, unless we do all get together at that point and say, like, all right, what are we doing with this thing? Then it's not going to be this cohesive narrative. It'll be you guys, like, being just murderous bandits as you, like, run across the countryside. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's really, and so I get really defensive about people saying, like, I wish Griffin would let the boys, like, make more of a, like, big decision, because to answer the thing that we haven't even talked about, which is the point of the question of, like, things you guys did, the whole arms outstretched sequence where Taco Soul Jars and you guys pull Magnus from death, I'm not kidding, I had a whole thing in the astral plane gone, like, fucking gone. That was probably the biggest, most brutal thing. The Chalice episode, which I think is maybe the most important episode of the season, the series so far, where we, like, finally get into your guys' backstories, and then the Chalice tries to tempt you. I fully fucking thought that Magnus was going to take the offer, and I had two episodes worth of stuff, no bullshit, of like parallel worlds and alternate timelines and, like, dark, the darkest timeline style shit happening, and you all trying to, like, pull Magnus from the brink, or, like, I thought Magnus wasn't going to make it through 11th hour, full stop. But you didn't take the offer, and so I was like, oh, okay, walk away from that. And then there's littler stuff, like I mentioned in the last the Adventure Zone, like I had a cool battle on top of the train that Magnus kind of did away with this wild acrobatic stunt. So, like, I definitely take the reins in some episodes more than others when I need to, like, really get things tied down and tied back in, because I'm trying to do kind of a complex thing, and I don't want to let anything go unresolved. But at the same time, like, it is not you guys reading scripts. I have definitely tailored, like, the big picture stuff to, like, suit the things that I think you all are enthusiastic about your characters, and that's the way I try to justify it.
So before we answer more questions, the whole reason we're doing the Adventure Zone is we are in the middle of the Max Fun Drive. And so let's talk a little bit about that. And we're going to fly through this and we'll get back to your questions, and then we'll do, like, a lightning round question section. So Maximum Fun is a listener supported network. That means that we do some ads, but primarily the network and these shows exist because of listeners like you. So once a year, we do a 2-week drive where we ask you to consider supporting the shows and the artists that you love. We have a bunch of different levels that you can give at. For $5 a month, there is something like 100 hours of bonus content that you get access to. There's I DM'd a couple episodes of what we're calling Adventure Zone Nights in a
let's establish canon. Is it Knights with a K?
It's Knights with an it, like, it's a play on, like, Baywatch.
No, I know,
Knights,
I know. But this could also be a play on a play on Knights.
Okay, sure. Fuck it. Yeah, it's Adventure Zone Knights with a K. But it's also in a quantum state where if you've ever spelled it with an N, you were also correct retroactively. Which, by the way, Stephen, the goldfish, is also in a quantum state where it is both with a V and with a PH, depending on if I remember how
it's all. It's an audio medium, folks. It's
all. And Stephen's okay, right? Stephen's okay.
Oh, we'll talk about that in a second. Don't get it twisted. But so for $5 a month, you get all that bonus content, and not just for Adventure Zone, for all the other shows in the network, and not just for this year. All the past years. It's such a bargain. And in the Adventure Zone Nights, it's a whole new world with new characters. The IDM Griffin.
A whole new world.
Griffin, Justin, and Dad play as new characters. Justin plays as Troth, and she's a monk tiefling. Griffin plays as an eldritch bartender named Tom Collins, and Dad plays as kind of a disgraced blackballed bard named Lenny Manlito. And because we've hit 10,000, there's going to be a part two to this year's Adventure Zone Nights coming out very shortly. We're recording that tomorrow. But so that's at $5. At $10, you get the bonus content.
Well, by the time you're hearing this, we've already recorded it.
That's true.
Twist.
So at $10 a month, you get access to all the bonus content. You also get your choice of an enamel pin. There's one for every show on the network. And because we're past 10,000, if you are a $10 donor after the drive, you're going to be able to purchase more pins with the proceeds of that going to charity. So at $20 a month, you get a pin, you get the bonus content, you also get a keep in touch kit that has stationery. It's got a rocket pin with four colors in it. You get a candle shaped like a rocket that smells like sharpened pencils and friendship. You get a rocket stamp, basically anything you need to keep in touch. And then at $35 a month, you get the keep in touch kit, you get the pin, you get the bonus content, and you get some engraved beer mugs engraved with the Max Fun Rocket logo.
But you know what, Trav, it's not really just about the gifts. The gifts are nice, but what you're really doing is helping to make more stuff you like in the universe. This show exists because of the Max Fun Drive, and it gave us the freedom to be able to create it, and we wouldn't be doing it without it. So like, by voting with your dollars, you are helping to ensure that we make more cool stuff, and that's really... that's really amazing, and we appreciate your support in all of that.
This show has grown a lot, and that means a lot to me. And the Max Fun Drive is like one way, in addition to just like seeing how big and how passionate the community is, that like inspires me to spend more time on it. Like, I wouldn't spend a bunch of time writing music and doing all this stuff and writing and pre-pro and stuff if, like, I didn't think there was a demand for it, if I didn't think that, like, people were going to get some level of enjoyment out of that. So, like, this show is what it is because of the Max Fun Drive and because of the people who support it. So,
So if you love Max Fun and you love Adventure Zone, please consider supporting. Go to MaximumFun.org/donate. Take a look at the different levels, see which one's right for you. And if you're already a donor, please consider upgrading, because we count towards that. I think we're going to hit 20,000 by the end of the drive, but we can only do that with your help. So boys, I would like to rapid fire lightning around some questions at you.
Okay.
Specific for each one of you, and we'll see if we can just knock out some of these.
Yeah, because we literally have 100 or so on here still.
But can I do one first?
Go for it.
Dad, why does Merle not like Angus?
Oh, actually, that was a very legitimate character choice, because I've always kind of played Merle as... I do it too.
To the moon.
As a character who was really kind of insecure about his place on the team. He was never much of a team guy and saw anybody that joined the party with distrust. If you look back, even Killian coming on, anybody that came on.
Wow. And, I never, fuck man.
I made the choice that Merle would always feel so insecure that, you know, what do they need him for? He's a failed cleric. He's short. 90% of the spells he casts are failures. So anytime anybody came along with any level of competency, he saw that character as a threat to his position in the group.
I feel bad for dumping on Merle in so many of the arcs, right? Like in Crystal Kingdom, you were the one getting pursued because you had the highest death count, and now Pan has abandoned you. But I promise that sweet reward. I promise I have death. I have plans for all
you
y'all
mean
boys.
Death.
Sweet release of death.
The sweet release of death.
So Griffin, Who's your favorite and least favorite NPC to play as and or voice?
My favorite is Angus, of course. Although I've gone back and listened, and there's some pretty wide variations. The voice for Angus came from it was a Super Ego sketch, and it was the one where they're on the go. One of the characters is on the train. Super Ego is another comedy podcast that's really good. There's a sketch where like there's this, just a guy on a train, and a bunch of weird folks come and talk to him, and one of them was a ghostly boy.
I never knew that.
Yeah, and he was. What does he say? He just talks about being ethereal and won't you take my clammy diaphanous hand or something like that. I straight just lifted that from that. Although like now I just do it kind of a higher voice. Hi. And so right, I like Angus. My least favorite is just like any character that's like down here. All like 12 of them. I'm talking a low voice. I'm either
Jenkins. So it's strictly based on voice, not character.
I'm either Jenkins or I'm Johad or I'm any six characters. Like yeah. I have like four voices that I try to do for everybody.
Justin, this is from Rick Sanchez. Have Taco and Kravitz been on other dates other than the one on the show?
I mean. It, you would be on the, I mean.
A lot of people want to know this, Justin. They want to know more about the relationship between Kravitz and Taco.
But it is, I'm not being flippant. It's an essential disparate thing to me. Like, I don't know. It wasn't on the show. It's up to you. Do you think they did? I don't know. My part is done. I don't have to do more. I did my part of it by talking and recording it. Like, as far as I'm concerned, that's my contribution to that stuff. And I don't want to fill in the gray areas where other people can like hang out and do whatever. I would say, I'm sure it seemed like they had a fun time. Like, yeah. I guess
On the top,
it seemed like they enjoyed each other's company. But like, I just don't want to, I really feel pretty strongly that like stuff that wasn't on the show, I'm not really interested in making like ruling statements on. Cause like if I want to leave flexibility for people.
I just want to hop in here and say, like, the demand for Tuckett's content is like, yes, definitely. It's a lot. There's a lot of demand for Tuckett's content. And I do want to say, if only fucking Magnus had not been pulled from the clutches of death, we would have gotten a lot more Kravitz time. But
oh, thank you. Now that you're dumping on me again.
No. That was one of my fucking favorite things that you guys did a cooler thing there than I had envisioned. I'm just saying, like, I get a lot of tweets now. It's like, wow, Kravitz wasn't in this episode at all, and you set up this like perilous situation. It's like, I know Kravitz is a really great character, but like, this is me trying to reverse engineer the stuff I was going to do in the astral plane, like into the rest of the story. So it's not me like ignoring.
If we hit 20,000 new and upgrading,
no, stop.
We'll release
as
a deleted scene.
Shut your mouth. No, I will say one more note about Kravitz. I know people really like the Tuckett's coupling, and I'm into it for sure. I think if there is one reason. And I'm reading into this from Griffin. Griffin has not presented other opportunities for Taco and Kravitz to interact. But I will say this. It is zero sweat off my brow to role play as a male fella and going on a date with another fella. I have zero issue with that whatsoever. It is, however, exponentially more weird to go on imaginary dates with my brother.
Yeah.
It's like a lot weirder.
I don't want to trivialize this, right? Because I know it's like,
no, I'm for a lot of people.
No, I get it. I'm just saying, like, it's also the only date that's ever been on the show was the Kravitz, like the only romantic date.
Merle and the director had a spa day.
I got some heat that was there.
More of a hang sesh, but
No, I think it's pretty much a date.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's way less weird for Dad to go on a date with Griffin.
I don't want to trivialize. Right. Like, I like that. I like folks shipping our characters, right? Like, I'm into it. And
except for Magnus. Magnus has only had one love.
Yeah,
he's done Magnus, with that.
Yeah, he's
Magnus.
No,
Steven.
Steven.
How about another question?
Well, hold on. So let me answer that question. So Steven the goldfish.
Oh, boy.
Anytime anything happens to Magnus Everyone is very concerned with Steven. Let me just say this right now. If anything were to ever happen to Steven, I would say it. Everyone's very concerned that something tragic has happened to Steven, and we just failed to mention it.
Yeah.
Steven is fine. He will almost always be like, I can't imagine a scenario in which the payoff is going to be something bad happening to Steven. Steven is fine. If not, if you haven't heard otherwise, safe to assume Steven is fine.
And more importantly, there's going to be more Kravitz stuff real soon. I promise. Hang in there, Kravitz heads.
Kravites. At Swift Martyrdom asked me, does Travis still have Magnus's old backstory written down somewhere? And if so, could we hear some of it? Here's the thing. I wrote that backstory like before we ever started playing. And once we actually started, this is the most like long form improv I've ever done. Like, years long. And so that backstory, I don't think the backstory that you hear in the 11th hour arc more now, like more accurately reflects Magnus than anything I wrote a while ago. Like it's two different characters at this point. Cause the backstory I had was this really broken, like bitter dude that had like seen some shit and was kind of forced into this heroic role. And like, it is no longer representative. It was much more like Mal Reynolds, but without the humor.
Yeah.
And the Magnus you see now is much more like the humorous side.
It didn't fit the, not just Magnus's character, but it didn't fit the tone of the show all. It was pitch fucking black.
It was dark. It was very dark. And I will say that the one huge element that carried over into both is Julia, is the wife. And yeah, a lot of people I saw talking about like, you know, women dying as part of the backstory. I will say for me, it is maybe the most grounded character choice. I like, as far as time, someone asked, what's a thing that like I have the most, Julia asked, how appropriate, what's the biggest thing you and Magnus have in common? And the reason that I made the decision to have his wife passed away is, and it might get a little serious here for a second, but for two reasons. One, our mom passed away when I was 21, and it's like one of the most impactful moments in my life to date. Like, it's like what shaped me to be the person I am and inspired me to like do more good with the time that I have left in the world. So like that was a big part of it. And then also my wife and being married. And my wife continuously inspires me to like constantly be a better person than I was before I met her. So like those two things is like what for me would make someone a hero. Like I kind of combined those elements in one. So like for me, everything that Magnus is from that.
Sure. I also like, I am also kind of like, I totally get these criticisms, and there's been a lot coming in, stemming from episode 59 and some of the stuff that came in there about like, fridging, right? That concept, that trope of fridging women characters to inspire male heroism. And, I definitely get that. And I think we've definitely stepped in it. I tried so hard to sidestep some bad tropes when like doing this show. Like it was important for me that there was never like a, you know, like a princess for you all to rescue, but I definitely fucked up in that, like the bury your gaze trope with the Ram and Raven, Hurley and Sloane, at the end of the Pedals to the Metal arc, which, because when I was writing that, I was like, oh, it's the first like romance in this show, and I'll give it a tragic ending, without knowing that there was this whole fucking, like, that's how most like gay and lesbian relationships in media end, is with tragic endings, which I didn't realize. And so like I've stepped in it a lot in that regards, and I think we've probably also not done so great about avoiding you know, women dying for dudes to have like the kickstart for their adventure. Like we haven't done it a lot, but maybe a little bit more than I'm comfortable with, which brings me to Loop, which I'd like to just sort of clear the air about in the next 2 minutes, if you'll allow me. I had the idea for Taco to have this twin that he couldn't remember. Everybody has things that they couldn't remember because of the void fish. And I had this idea for Taco to have this twin sister, Loop. And the question that we got probably most in this whole thing, in prepping for this episode was, is Loop's name actually Chalupa? And here's where I'm at. And about two years ago, when
let me clarify, I asked Griffin this exact question.
Yeah.
As I was listening to the episode, and his exact answer to me was, "What does your heart tell you?"
here's where I'm at. When Justin made Taco, I'm guessing here, but I'm pretty sure when you came up with the name Taco, it was just, isn't this a silly thing to name your fantasy wizard in our role playing game? It was done out of like irreverent silliness, right?
Yes.
It was not. It was certainly not.
It's because naming anything like that is so whack. It's like, sure, it's so lame because it doesn't exist. And it's just like, here, I'm Grendelthorn Winstler.
Yes.
Like, fuck off. His name's Taco.
Bramblepill.
And at the time, like, Justin definitely wasn't doing. And I don't think there's been like much criticism to this point. Justin wasn't making a Latinx character and naming them after a Tex-Mex dinner food, right? That would be pretty racist, pretty problematic. It was just, this is a silly name to name somebody. Okay. When I had this idea for a twin he could not remember, I followed the same naming convention and thought, well, of course his twin would also be named after a Tex-Mex food. And so I came up with Chalupa and shortened it to Loop so that I, you know, could have a name that I could say that wouldn't give away the reveal, that also sounded like a cool actual name, right? And Loop has been referenced like a lot, pretty much most of the arcs, her name has been referenced. So fast forward to like now, and I think we're all a lot more cognizant about how people consume the show and how people have headcanons for basically how every character looks. And we encourage that, right? Like, I encourage that. I think it's cool. I think it's the coolest thing about this podcast, if I'm being frank. And there are a lot of people now who have this headcanon for Taco being a Latinx dude, thereby as an extension his sibling would also be Latinx. And now all of a sudden, if that is your headcanon, having two characters named Taco and Chalupa, who that's how you interpret them, that sucks, right? That's very, very, very problematic. And so now all of a sudden
clear, doesn't suck because they are Latino. Sucks.
No. It sucks because the naming, we're all fucking four white dudes. And that I think is pretty problematic if that's how you interpret those characters. And it does create a sort of like Schrodinger's racism where if you interpret these characters as Latinx, then those names are problematic. If you don't, then it's just like, oh, what silly names. I, as the DM and the person who came up with the name for this other character, can't say like, well, that's on you if that's how you interpret them, and also say like, I want everybody to interpret their characters however they want. You know what I mean? So that being said, I don't want folks who like, there's been a huge amount of people who are like, oh, Chalupa, I figured out your name. Griffin, you've been setting up this joke for such a long time, and I think there's people who are like, you know, into the name because maybe they don't interpret those characters in the same way. And I don't want those characters. This is not a judgment on those people or anybody. It is just like my own sort of discomfort at this thing now, based on how a lot of people have been reaching out, have interpreted it. So here's what's up. I can make this decision because I can do whatever the fuck I want with the characters in this world or the world itself. Loop's name is just, I think canonically, it's just going to be just Loop, right? That's what we've been calling her. And I think that's like the best way to kind of move forward. I need to be a little bit more steadfast here.
Spell it L-O-O-P.
No, Loop's name is L-U-P. It's how we spelled it. And it's not short for anything. Loop's name is just Loop. And that's the end of the story, because there's so much more. There's more stuff I'm doing with Loop, like a lot more stuff I'm doing with Loop. And I don't know. I don't want anybody to listen to this podcast and be uncomfortable because of some racist undertones that were completely and completely and totally unintentional. Like, I don't want it is important for me that nobody sort of has that, and it's way more important to me than like landing some 2-year-old stupid pun, right?
Pseudo joke,
pseudo kind of lazy joke.
Dad, I have a question here from Allison Wilgus. Says, has working on the graphic novel script and revisiting early episodes while adapting them affected how you feel about Taz as a player?
As a player, it's made me appreciate Griffin's storytelling, Griffin's world building.
Thanks, Daddy.
Because really and truly, by about the third or fourth story, it was obvious that, well, even before that, that you had gone off the rails and started working on your own thing. And it has affected me in the fact that when I realized that, it kind of made me realize that I had to up my game a little bit. And it's sort of like what Justin touched on before. When people were asking about, do we do things that push Griffin's buttons on purpose? Yeah, we do that. But do we do things to try to derail the story? No, we don't. I'm being honest here. I really think that we become actors, and I think we really try very hard to balance out like the riffs, you know, like the meta kind of stuff and the current references and the pop culture references with trying to be pure to a character. And honest to God, we really didn't have characters until I think like the second arc, maybe the third arc. For me, a big moment was Merle getting his arm chopped off. It made me kind of realize that it was, you know, it was real. And, you know, this was kind of, you know, full-fledged character building. And, you know, that's informed a lot of the things that have happened since then. You know, Merle's attitude towards Magnus a little bit in kind of a fun way. But going back and redoing the graphic novel, I mean, adapting the graphic novel has just kind of re-impressed me all along because, man, I'm telling you, there's a lot of jokes, but there's a lot of heart. That didn't start showing until later, I think. We had a few flashes of it early on, but I think that's when it became kind of special.
I think we didn't know that we had that the show had the capability for that early on.
I agree.
It wasn't in our...
It was a joke fest.
Yeah, and we didn't know that it had, like, we didn't... It's like a car that flew all of a sudden. It's like, wait a minute, can we really...
That is such a good way of... Because
We grease-ending it really bad. Like, the ending of Grease, like, wait, what? Are they dead? What's going on?
I see folks recommending this show to other folks on Twitter all the time, and they say, like, you gotta listen to this show. Like, the story goes to some places, and I see a lot of people say, like, it emotionally affects them, and like, oh, man, I cried so much during this episode. I see somebody say, oh, I'm gonna start listening to The Adventure Zone. And then, like, a day later, it's like, I just hit this point in the Adventure Zone where one of them murdered somebody and asked why they got a boner. Like, are you sure this is the same one? I have a question here for all of you, and it's from Lily beside the rocks, who says, what are each of your favorite musical pieces Griffin has produced for the show?
I really, really like, I just like the whole soundscape of the, of Pedals to the Metal. But for me, I just really love the music Griffin made for this year's bonus Adventure Zone Nights. I know you said you cranked out in 30 banger. Minutes.
It rocks.
It's really good.
I like the Crystal Kingdom song, I think is the best. I found it very, like, to hear it later, I found it very
well, sort of,
like, chilling.
You got a lot of ASMR, like, stuff going on. And so I made that, you know, I thought that might
be. My brother can't give me ASMR. I'm a normal person. Okay. Like, that's ridiculous. I'm immune to your ASMR charms.
Arms outstretched.
Oh.
I think the music that you had in there.
Well, thank
you. That was pretty cool.
Thank you. I asked this.
You don't get
to guys
talk. We talked about your stuff.
Let Griffin talk about the favorite piece of music that he's written
now
himself.
For himself. I wanted to say for one of the, like, most interesting things about doing the music is I did like a mostly like Western sort of acoustic soundtrack for the 11th Hour, right? And I got a lot of people saying like, wow, it's cool that you're sampling Bastion, which is a really fucking great, what would you say, like twin stick RPG sort of thing? Maybe not twin stick, that's not the right word for it. But and a lot of people like, wow, you sampled Bastion a lot. And as that arc went on, it was more and more people like, okay, wow, you're sampling Bastion in like every song. And I realize it's because both me and the composer for the soundtrack for Bastion used like a bunch of SoundCloud, or not SoundCloud, GarageBand, which is the software I use, used the same like pool of loops. So this, I wanted to clear the air about that because I also saw a lot of questions about like me yoinking Bastion stuff, and it's like, well, I promise I wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna take this from the Bastion soundtrack. It's just we took from the same pool of loops, because there's stuff like slide guitars in Roswell's theme. Like I don't own a slide guitar or know how to play it, so I used loops, and it was just the same one that they used in Bastion.
We had a question from Felix, and I think we can answer this pretty quick. Any chance we can see y'all playing some female or gender non-conforming characters in future iterations of Taz? And I do want to say, if you haven't listened to the Adventure Zone Nights yet, you should. Justin plays as a tiefling monk who I believe identifies as female, named Troth.
Yes, Troth kicks ass. I think this is important, right? Like I talked about, like I want there to be good representation on this show. And I just would want to make sure that like I want to make sure we do a good job of it if we do it as player characters. Like I'm not like I wouldn't be afraid, right, to play a woman or a non-binary or non-gender conforming character. I just would want to make sure that, like, I don't know, that I did a good job and I didn't fall into any pitfalls.
Remember, we just talked about how we made one stupid naming decision and it haunted us for 2.5 years. Like, it's hard, y'all.
It's hard, but like,
but to answer your question, yes.
Yeah, we'll do it.
We want to make great, interesting characters, and like, so the answer is yes, but I don't ever want to do it as a stunt. I don't ever want to do it because like, hey, fandom, do you like this? I always want it to be because it's the right thing for the character, the right thing for the story, and the right thing for us in the audience. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a tricky balance, but it's something that we'll definitely focus on.
Griffin, I have a question for you that a lot of people ask that I don't know the answer to, which is you talk about in episode 59, like I've two questions. One, so Magnus has the new body, right?
Yeah.
And the physical stuff that he lost during Wonderland.
Does he remember Kaelin?
Yeah.
No. So the way that I kind of thought about this, and you all, this is what fucked me up when you guys were like, oh, don't get back in your body, you'll forget everything, is we were kind of thinking about it a different way, and that I was thinking that, like, your memories and the things that you remembered kind of resided in your spirit or whatever that was inside of the mannequin, and so when it was outside of your body, you were technically dead, and so the Voidfish didn't work on you, and that's why you're remembering those visions and all that shit. But, like, I think your memory lived in your spirit, so when it got back in your body, just because your body was from a time before Wonderland, like your brain would still remember Kaelin. That's not really how I think about it. And frankly, like that moment was too cool to take away. So like, no, Magnus doesn't remember Kaelin. And because I do kind of like this idea of Merle and Taco having to go on this vengeance quest for this dude they've never met before. That we may not, which may not happen, but just like, I'm not going to take that away.
No, I'm going to call it right. I'm going to call it right now. We're going to have, at some point, we're going to do a live show. And it's going to be a two-night hunt, the hunt for Governor Kaelin.
Oh, I'll play as Kaelin.
Stunt spectacular.
Like a Rogue One spinoff. Okay.
And for those of you asking, K-A-L-E-N, Kaelin.
It's not, I don't think you meant to do it like Kaelin, like Elliot Kaelin from...
No, he's named after Elliot Kaelin. He's named after Elliot Kaelin. It's just spelled differently.
Oh, great. hey, folks, I'm going to...
There was one other important question, Griffin. Why was Garfield growing Magnus's body?
And I will take that to my fucking grave.
I do want to say...
There is a reason.
When we did the Interrobang live show here in Cincinnati in February, someone came up to me and was talking to me about Avenger Zone, and this was after Magnus was in the mannequin, and they said... You know, Garfield has been collecting these things. Maybe he's growing a body. And I was like, holy shit, that's amazing. And I said, if that turns out to be the case, I'll remember and thank you. And I cannot remember his name.
Oops.
And so I am saying now, I was inspired to like pursue that. That was a joint collabo. If you're listening, please tell me it was you so I can thank you officially.
I'll never say. I think it's too, like, Garfield is such a nebulous, fascinating character to me, and so much so that people do not know if he is a cat or not. And so,
but that's another great that's another great example of a character that was like was a punchline, and then just by necessity, we started to hang other things on.
But that's the Adventure Zone. Like, that's like why Davenport is the captain of Fantasy NASA, apparently. Like, that's what I've kind of been. That's been the big payoff. That's why Barry Blue Jeans is fucking alive again. Like, yeah, that's. And I don't do that stuff purely as jokes or whatever. But it's certainly a benefit. But like, no, I'm not going to tell you why Garfield was growing an extra Magnus body. He was a fairly evil mercantile warlock guy. So like, maybe figure it out. But like, I to me, leaving that a mystery is fucking hysterical. And I'll never ever say.
All right, we're gonna talk about the future of Taz, but real quick, we want to make one last push for the Max Fun Drive. MaximumFun.org/donate is the address you can go to. And if you enjoy this show, and I know a lot of you do, it would really mean the world if you could kick in just $5 a month. If you like this show and you want to help keep this and like other stuff we do rolling and make it easier for us to make this stuff consistently, it really is the best way to do it. We only do this once a year, and we come to you and say, hey, please, if you can help out, if we all pitch in a little bit, then it makes it so much easier, and it lets us create stuff, and it really, it means a lot. For just $5 a month, you're going to get days upon days of bonus content. If you can kick us $10 a month, you get all that plus a pin based on whatever show that you like the best. For $20 a month, you get the pin, you get the bonus content, and you get a really cool keep in touch kit with all the subscribers listed before. But really, it's just the act of this network isn't founded on a few $100 to $200 a month donors. We certainly appreciate the people who are able to do that. But what it is built on and the strength of this network is the multitudes of $5 and $10 and $20 donors. Like that, and $35 donors. Like that is what the network is founded on. And it really is thanks to you that we're able to make the stuff that we make. And we appreciate it so much. And if you haven't taken the time to, and you know, we're down to the final days of the drive. So please, MaximumFun.org/donate. And kick us a few bucks. It really would mean the world.
Yeah. I don't really know what else to say. The support the show has gotten has changed my life, and this is like the first piece of fiction that I've ever done, and that like all of us collaboratively have ever done, and the response to it has been incredible, and the support that we got in the last couple Max Fun drives has been like overwhelming, and just thank you so much. If you enjoy the show and you spend time with it and you have the means, just think about donating.
MaximumFun.org/donate.
Alley-oop, there it was. There was that slam dunk. Let's talk about what's next. Because I can say
we're gonna end the show. Bye.
Yeah, bye. No, we
tell them you're joking, Trav.
Oh, I'm joking. Thank you for all your support. It really means. But two more episodes and we're out.
Then we're out. No, we'll take the money and run.
No. Woo.
So next in Adventure Zone is going to be a sort of special thing. For like in this campaign, it's going to be kind of a special thing that gets into what I referenced at the end of the last episode, the Stolen Century, is going to be the name of it, and we're going to dive in, and we're going to answer basically every question up to this point. And my hope is that
except about Garfield
and his purposes. And my hope is that by the end of that, we will basically be at the starting line of the finale, which will definitely take more than one episode to get through. So that's sort of the roadmap for the rest of this campaign.
The balance arc, the
Bureau of Balance Grand Relic Saga, the Grand Relic.
It's called the balance arc. We came up with a whole kitschy name for it.
Balance arc. Okay. After that, we're gonna be transparent here because we've kind of struggled with this a lot. because this show does have a pretty big following now and a very passionate following. And we struggle with this idea of doing something new and pulling the rug out from under people and the transition, no matter what we do, moving from this thing that a lot of people are really, really passionate about to something new, even if that new thing is great or better, it will be a rough transition. And so we've struggled a lot with like the best way to do it, a way that will make the transition easiest for the listeners, but also will result in us starting in on the coolest and best imaginable thing that we could do next.
And
so,
yeah, let me also say this, just because I think this is, maybe this goes without saying, but I do want to just reiterate, no matter what we do after this, it does not erase the like 60 some 70 possibly episodes of the balance arc. Like that will be a thing that exists. You know what I mean?
In fact,
it will always be there for you to go back to.
My desire to wrap up this arc and have it be done is, well, twofold. First of all, I think it would be shitty eventually. Like eventually if we kept doing Taco Merlin Magnus, it would be bad. We need to be able to close this thing out. But also, like, I love the idea of just like closing it out and there it is, it's done. This thing that the four of us made over the course of almost 3 years that like we can all be really proud of. Here it is, it's done. It's got a nice little bow on it. There it is. That's it. So next, what we're doing next, I will say we don't have set in stone. I think we're just gonna try some stuff out for a little while. Travis has sort of brought up the idea of like doing some mini stuff, some one shots, which will take a little while.
What I suggested was like, you know, we've talked about it before of like us all taking turns, you know, GMing something. And so like different mechanics, different settings, different stories, you know, one or two episode arcs of just like, here's what Justin's vision of this would be. Here's what Dad's vision. Here's what mine, that kind of thing, where we try different stuff out instead of just trying to jump headfirst into like another big arc, having little, you know, little excursions into different worlds.
Until we find what the next thing is, like what the next thing that makes sense. I have a few ideas. And then once we get like, once we find our footing and we feel really confident about it and think we have something that folks are really going to like, then we start in on the next big arc. And I think the next big arc probably won't be as long as Balance. It's not going to be 2.5 years. I hope.
I think that we made a tactical error, not a tactical error, but it's like figuring out as we go along. This show was always intended, well, not always intended. It wasn't always intended to be fucking anything.
Right.
But to be a consistently produced thing, this show needed to be able to evolve but beyond individual storylines and individual specific games.
Yeah.
And it will do that. We're still going to be telling stories, and hopefully we'll be better at it.
We'll be way better
from
at
the
it.
Jump
yeah.
than trying to back into it. Dad, you're looking at me furtively. What do you think?
Uh-uh.
No, I don't know what the word furtive means, but you're just looking at me.
Not thoughtful. What you thought.
I was wondering if you had some thoughts.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, at Merle, Taco, Magnus, and
everyone,
Griffin the DM, we'll continue in other forms.
Yeah,
we've got the graphic novel that's going to be coming out.
Yes,
we have the bedsheet sets that we're working on. So
well, the big thing that's going to be
Spaceballs the cereal, Spaceballs the toilet paper.
The big thing that's going to be germane to you, the listener, is one thing we've talked about is just live shows. Still going to be Trace Horny Boys because we don't know what the next shit's going to be. And so the idea of just like once Trace Horny Boys thing is over, I don't know if the next thing's going to be good for live shows. This thing is, but we don't know. But this is one way that we can keep their thing going with little side stories and stuff like that. So I think, yeah, live shows, well, we can still do Balance. One thing that I kind of want to do is move away from D&D, which I think is, I know there's a lot of folks who play a lot of tabletop games who are kind of, hard on D&D, like very negative about it. I still think it's a great game. I just don't know that it's suited for our purposes really well. Well, like case in point, if you're a magic user, there's almost always a billion things you can do. And so most of the stuff I edit out of the show is, Dad or Justin, and this is not a knock against them, because if we were just playing around a table, it would not be a big deal, but because it's an audio medium where there's other people listening, it is a big deal. Like trying to figure out what to do next because they have this huge multitude of options. And so, like, I want to move to something that's more rules light and more And not to say that D&D can't be a narrative-heavy game, but something that is sort of more designed around that. I'm going to reference...
We've already been playing this version of D&D as rules light as we possibly could.
And I get a lot of flack from people just like, well, that's not how that works. There's a lot of people who are very angry that I say the word bluff check instead of deception check. And it's, first of all, I'm sorry. That's what they call it in fourth edition. Get out of my butt. But like, I feel like something that is more rules light, where you guys can do things and interpret them using a smaller set of rules, will be like way, way, way better for this.
And it may actually make us adhere more.
Yeah, because sure.
There is that like issue of slippage where... Yeah. You know, I'm not going to talk about the material. I referenced material components for my spells once when it was like a cool thing to do.
And that was it. I'm going to reference friends of the
spellcasting time.
I'm going to reference friends of the table here again, because they use rule systems that are it's a system kind of like how D&D is a part of the D20 system. There's a system called Powered by the Apocalypse that I really like. It's all like you just roll 2d6 and that determines fucking everything. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of games covering hundreds of different genres that like I'm looking at that. Like I think that could be, I don't want to chomp their flavor, but like I think that is, it's just better. Like it's a better, it is a better like format for a narrative heavy, like game light actual play podcast. And I don't want to like I think Critical Role plays either D&D or Pathfinder, like I'm not dragging like actual play shows that do D&D because they're fucking super super good. I just think as the more we go along, the more D&D stuff I ignore, and I don't know that we're doing ourselves a
Let's be honest. We'll always have a debt to D&D.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what started Taz.
Yeah, I think it's a good game to play, definitely. And it's good for it's a fun game to play, like as a game, like a tabletop game. It's just like it's not, I don't think, so suited to the way that we do the radio show.
And I also think it's like just like these characters, just like Griffin said at the beginning. If we kept playing D&D, there's other options out there, and like this is our D&D arc. With Merle Magnus and Taco. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Specifics.
Do we want to toss out a couple of the genre ideas we've had?
Yeah, so I... Dad, why don't you tell them yours? Because I'm excited about it.
Well, I've got an idea to do a superhero story. And it's actually the basic framework of the story is based on a comic book premise that I sold years and years and years ago that just never came to print. And I'm...
Is it Free Jack?
Really... No.
Can I say that?
It's not the Three Ninjas Kick Back either.
Did you ghostwrite both of those?
I didn't illustrate any of them. I wrote them.
Ghostwrite.
I did. No, I didn't ghostwrite them. I actually got credit.
I thought you ghostwrote Free Jack.
The first issue with Chuck Dixon.
This is so not what this is about.
All right, fine.
But anyway, I'm looking at a superhero setting, and just that's kind of the idea I've been kicking around.
I've got
mine that I'm kind of looking at is inspired by the 11th Hour. I would like to do kind of like an Old West RPG and kind of focus on more on like an Old West, like actual, you know, real world Old West setting. So I'm going to try to find a mechanic that works for that and write a story. People have asked about Adventure Zone Knights, if that would expand. I think that would be tricky because there's so much info that exists for donors only. But also, like, I didn't create it for an arc. I created it
as a one-off
stories. Yeah. So,
I have an idea for a like a Persona and Buffy inspired RPG about a sort of unsuccessful West Virginia ski resort town that monsters start attacking. And I also have an idea for a Cowboy Bebop and Battlestar Galactica-inspired, like, post-apocalyptic, hip, jazzy space opera.
I have an idea that it is like a Sherlock Holmes, and we're all Sherlock Holmeses, and we find different clues that are better than the other ones. And it's like, but wait, you missed this. And that's like, the whole thing is like, four super smart Sherlock Holmes. And also, one of us is a vampire, but are we good enough detectives to figure out which
shit
it is?
Yeah,
I don't know if you're joking, but I want to play that super bad.
I'm obviously joking. We need to wrap up so bad. Keep your feet on the ground.
No, hold on.
Hold on. We need to say some stuff. We can't just say the fucking outro. Yes.
So as is clear, we are still kind of like nailing it down, but that gives you kind of a basic idea. The show will not stop.
No.
When the arc is done.
It's
and,
too much
and
fun.
There will be some like, you know, finding our feet and everything. And once again, as has been up to this point, the deal with Adventure Zone, audience feedback and you guys buying in is going to kind of shape the way it goes. That, but that's where we're at.
But to be clear, that we didn't mention those to like put it, this is not up for a vote. We'll pick something that works and do it. But we of course want to hear from you after we're making the things.
And, you know, and again, it's a bi-weekly show, so it's going to take us a while before we get on to the next big, big arc. But I promise you, it's going to be fucking... I'm really looking forward to it. It is going to be so much fun to make new characters and explore new worlds and new genres and all that. So, like, I think it's going to be incredible. And I think the next thing we do, like, I'm already excited for it. So we hope you can get on board.
And we love Merle, Magnus, and Taco. We really and truly do. And we appreciate you loving them. But let me be the dad and let me just say, just trust us.
Just trust us. It's going to be good.
You trusted us before. Keep trusting us.
We also hope that you'll consider donating to the Maximum Fun Drive, maximumfun.org/donate. Support the art and artists you love and then let us know. But you've heard us talk enough about that. I think it's time for us to wrap up. I don't know how we end this, but
thank you all for listening. Thank you to John Roderick. Thank you to Mort Garson and just Mort Garson for the use of our theme song Deja Vu off the album Ataraxia. That's it. Thanks for listening to The Adventure Zone, the Adventure Zone Zone, rather, and we'll be back with a new episode next Thursday, which is April the 6th. And yeah, it's going to be big. Thanks for coming along.
All right, Dad, now hit it.
Okay.
So keep it real, everybody. Thanks for being here.
Nope, bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.